Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Off the Post, where the intro music decided not to sound, but I'm going to ring the horn anyhow. Just because,
there we go.
You know,
yeah,
we're
you can't mess with them.
We're getting close to Hall of Fame induction, and I want to.
You can't mess with the mojo too much.
No, I want to congratulate Nick Lidstrom, Chris Pronger, Phil Housley,
yes.
Sergey Fedorov, Angelo Ruggiero. I saw Kermanos, and there's somebody in the builder that I'm leaving out, but everybody's well deserved. I did a little article on mainly Pronger and Lidstrom, added a little Fedorov,
yeah.
just because they were just amazing players. So people could check that out on Sportsology. I'll tell you, this heat wave is amazing. It's 70-something degrees.
Yeah.
I'm sure it's just as hot on Long Island where I'm from. And, you know, I lived there for 20 years. I love the place. Kind of have a nice kinship for it. And the guy we're inviting on, the poor schmuck, still lives there. But it's all right. We welcome on BD Galoff from the fourth period and CBS Local, New York. How are you, BD? How are you, man?
I'm good. I'm actually smoking a cigar on my porch in this weather.
Yeah, I figured you might be doing something like that.
That's the way to do it.
Got a little breeze out there, I'm sure.
Yeah, a little bit.
That's good. Well, we had a nice day today until the news came down that Ryan Strom was loaned, and I'll put it in quotes, to Bridgeport. And then just all hell just broke loose, even on my Twitter. I'm used to seeing your Twitter vomit like that, but not usually mine. And I'll tell you, it's an amazing thing right now with the Islanders, and the Ranger fans have a little part in this too. Things are going pretty good for these teams, and it's almost like the fans want to artificially create problems when there's little problems. There are definitely little problems, and the Islanders have them, but they're not big problems in the sense that they're not currently in the playoff hunt. Yes, they've left some points on the table, but do you feel like right now the fans are overreacting just a bit?
Yeah, it's a lot of the knee-jerk. Look, they still feel that there are weak points with the coaching, and some of the they still look at Josh Bailey and now Kuhlman as,
mm-hmm.
you know, third-line players, but, the fact is those players are actually performing. And what happens is they look for scapegoats, and they're always looking to blame someone, except for Ryan Strome, which is amazing because his playing has been putrid. And
mm-hmm. I witnessed the other day in the Devils game,
yep.
With Tavares out, it's funny because on another show that I go on with, I was mentioning that I felt the Islanders benched him originally because if you looked at his production, you could say a lot of it came from Tavares, and he was way off track for even his last year goals total. And even though he's not a goal-first guy, they need goals from this guy. And so I said, okay, I get that. And then I saw him play without Tavares, and he was like a lost puppy out there. He was horrible. And Franz Nielsen was actually their best player that game, and that's
mm-hmm.
when I sort of muttered to myself, all right, well, they got to work on this because there is a problem here. But I didn't know this was going to happen.
Yeah, well, here's your choices, what you do. It's about accountability, and you make your point of accountability with your best players, not your worst players. Everybody's saying, why is Strait still playing?
Right.
Well, Hickey's out. So they decided that they wanted the kids to get a little bit more time at Bridgeport, and they make that decision. So it's not a comparison. So what you can do with the best player like that, and besides the accountability, is you can sit them, you're going to demote them, or you're going to trade them. And they're not trading them. So, they sat them. The performance did not get better. And now you demote them. That's, and this is not a bad thing. This is, kids go through this stuff. Hedman had ups and downs. Larson, Duchesne, Kadri, Kane, Huberdeau, Nurse, Connolly, Skinner. And we can go on and on. Not everybody is John Tavares. Not everybody is Sidney Crosby. Not everybody just waltzes and takes off. Some of them have ups and downs or things that they kind of need to hammer out. And that's what's happening with Ryan Strome. And any kind of overreaction, why isn't Why isn't Capuano developing him? Development time is over. This is no longer a rebuild. He had 50 points last year. He's on track for 25 to 30. This is a problem. This is not with a coach and incentive, and this is an organizational decision. Garth makes these decisions. So, you know, they're throwing blame wherever they think it can stick, except for on the player.
Petey, one of the bright sides certainly for the Islanders right now has been the goaltending pairing of Yaroslav Halak and Thomas Greiss. I know we really kind of focused in a lot on Greiss as being a as being an upgrade for their for the team in the offseason. Just speak a little bit to what they've been able to provide here in the early part of the season.
What they seem to be doing, and they did this with in the past, I think they chased Greiss the season before, except that he went to Pittsburgh. You know, they like his ability to stop high-danger shots. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and the players that they got instead, they had some trouble with the system, so they were clearly looking for him to as a better fit, and we've seen it. You know, he's stolen a couple of games, which is, for Islander backup goalies, is unheard of. So he's been more than solid, you know. That, you know, he's not the same. You know, Halak is a little bit better, but you're not having that much of a fall off when Greiss plays.
Yeah, no question. Now, I'm not saying this move is a horrible move, by the way, because I know people on Twitter, they either expect you to back it or not, but I'm sort of somewhere in the middle ground. I mean, they're only loaning them, so I think that's a 7-day, 10-day deal, and so they're basically saying, you're not coming with us on the road trip. And think about this and get your game together. And when we come back, he'll get called back up. It protects him from waivers. And I think that's the right move. I actually think this could be a good break for one of their defensemen. I mean, you know, Ryan Pulak, he might get a shot. Maybe Pellett gets a shot. Maybe Mayfield gets a shot. You know, I think if they're looking for that offense, then bring up Pulak, but you got to put him on the power play. If you don't do that, then don't bring him up because he has to get there. And if you want to get toughness in there, bring up Mayfield because he's got a lot of snarl and his skating's improved to the point where I think he can give some meaningful minutes, and Pellett kind of gives you a little of both. None of those things will hurt them. And so I think this could be a plus in the sense that they're going to get to see some of their young talent where maybe they weren't going to push the button this early. But you know what? Sometimes you have to.
Yeah, you know, Strait has been kind of awful, and it's hard to gauge if Zdlicky has actually been good or not because his line mate is, you know, his defensive pairing with Strait has not exactly been ideal. I kind of feel like Pellick might be the guy as a mix. It just seems to be they seem to be reticent of putting Pulak on the left side, and though Mayfield could be that guy, I was kind of wondering if Pellick might be kind of have the skill sets in both areas that they might want to utilize instead. So, but we'll see.
One question I certainly wanted to ask you as well is with regards to the, I know there's been obviously a lot of conversations about the shift over obviously to Brooklyn and playing at the Barclays Center. What has your impressions been of the arena itself and how the fans sort of taken to it?
Well, I haven't been to Barclays yet because I just started working on Long Island and mm-hmm. I can't get off the time to go over there yet. But I've gotten a lot of feedback from fans all over the place. You know, there's a little bit of scapegoating happening with Barclays where everybody's looking for everything that's wrong and accentuating it. And there are others who are very happy with Barclays, even though they're not happy that they left Long Island. You know, it's been mixed. I think the scoreboard not being centered is a very small issue compared to the obstructed views where you can't even see the goal.
Right.
But, you know, there's going to have to be some... I'm not quite sure what they're going to be able to do about it, but at least they're playing nearby. You know, a lot of people are sitting there counting attendance and, you know, wondering, you know, what the Islanders feel about it. And I don't know if the Islanders feel anything about it because that's Barclays' issue. And Barkley's issue and work on that has only just begun. So people counting that or ESPN pieces pointing that out, you know, you can't market something until you have the team there. So I feel like it's a year or two premature to sit there and saying this is a failure when Barkley's entire marketing push is to peel away, you know, and get people in New York City and Brooklyn, and that's going to take time.
Okay. So I do have a question from the chat room, and of course it's a little wise, but it's funny, and it says, you know, is the white SUV on lease or on loan? and so we have to chuckle at that a little because that's on Barclays, you know. They put it there. They have to face the sort of embarrassment that they are. As far as the, you know, I'm kind of mixed on the attendance in the sense that I feel like I was told all the year that they were getting ready to move in that attendance wasn't going to be a problem, that they were going to be selling out games, and they're not. I also understand what you're saying. I just don't feel like Barclays has reached out to new fans because, look, there's a lot of Ranger fans in that area. Why not reach out to new ones?
Yeah, I'm not quite sure of their marketing push at all. I don't know, you know, I'm a little surprised that they didn't have a little bit more moxie, especially in saying that they were going to have sellouts. You know, they were actually impressed with what they were able to carry over from Long Island. You know, they could do a much better job of it, which I've cited in a few podcasts and comments on Twitter, in being a little bit more flexible and a little less tone deaf. And hopefully they'll work on that, because I still think there's a lot to be tapped for Long Island to come over to fill those seats until, you know, they start to make some headway. But I'm not quite sure of where their marketing head is where it comes to getting new fans.
And I feel like they should get
taking advantage of
too.
The Russian players and everything else.
There's a lot of schools in that area. And, you know, I brought this up to somebody else, and they're like, well, Barclays is very corporate. But I feel like, hey, you need to start a new generation of fans. Why not get into schools and maybe start a program with some of the schools where if you get an A on a test, you can go and cash that in for like 30% off on, you know, select games. Why not do some things like that?
It's not a bad idea. I don't think they've really tapped or really have a clue on how to tap that from maybe a grassroots level. I think that's what the issue is. The issue is they're not very grassroots at all. They are too corporate. And they're hoping to fill everything in a corporate sense. And I think they need to think about or at least make a group of, you know, or at least a small group of trying to do grassroots efforts to start filling in seats and building interest, especially in lieu of that. I agree with you.
Brian, I know we also, I mean, obviously the focus being right now on the Strom demotion, but also there's, you know, some concern for some of the other young players that are on the team as well, specifically Anders Lee, who looked really had great moments last year, but his track right now isn't looking as good as it did before. What are some of the adjustments that you think a player like Lee needs to do in order to get himself back into a better frame?
Well, I thought he started the season off well, and they were performing in the beginning. The offense was elite. You know, the offense didn't really stutter until JT was out. And then everybody became kind of aimless. And this is you know, on the side of, you know, we've already talking about Strome, and that's been consistently off. But the Lee and Tavares pairing has been kind of worked on since the preseason. And I really am surprised that he's taken off the, you know, obviously I want to see more output. But I kind of feel that they should be back together. You know, if Bailey's playing well enough, and this is another thing that fans don't get, if Bailey's doing the kind of things that keeps the puck in the possession in the zone and allowing the other players to score, then he's doing the things that he's supposed to do, whether he gets the points or not. That's always the issue of fans in how they look at Bailey. But I would be fine with Bailey and Tavares and Lee as the top line, because we know that from last season that produces. you know, the Lee, he's especially tailed off, but I'm not as concerned as much as, the Strome situation. Lee's, maybe a little bit of hot and cold, and maybe the four games kind of, the three that JT was out kind of threw plans off.
Thing about Lee is in the game that I saw against the Devils, where I definitely felt like they gave the Devils a point and left the point on the table, and they've even gotten a few points, probably people would say cheaply, and maybe that's where their record is at. But Lee doesn't seem to be staying in the crease as much as he was last year. You know, he was really dangerous, especially against Metro teams in the crease. Like, he was just fierce against the Rangers, fierce against the Devils, and I just didn't feel like that was there. And that was a game without Tavares, and I've seen him in a few other, and I just don't think he's getting there enough on the power play and otherwise. What do you think?
I think it might be a confidence thing. I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. You know, the part of the issue is that the Islanders really haven't, and they're still, you know, in the thick of it, but they really haven't, you know, performed on all cylinders or even played a good possession game yet, which is amazing because of the record that they have. You know, and what's really kind of helped them is that, you know, they have good special teams for once, and, you know, their face-off level is good. You know, their wins are good, and the goaltending is very good. But they really haven't played particularly or gelled. I don't know if they got too cute during the preseason with all the different iterations and all the different experiments that they did. But they still haven't quite gotten there yet. And, you know, the first 10 to 12 games of the season, you can kind of work that out. But now, you know, we're a little bit deeper and we're at 14. And they're still not quite there yet, so it's becoming a little bit of an issue. And I think that, you know, a little bit of how Lee is playing and what he's doing might also stem from just their possession game is really not there yet. And I think that once it is, you might see them start to do a little bit more damage and Lee take a little bit more of being what he was last season.
Petey, just taking a little bit of an analysis here of the Islanders' blue line right now. I know you've had some concern. I know you say obviously Nicoletti, who was such a key component to that blue line last year, not quite off to the start that he was last season. But certainly looking at the unit like man for man, what are you seeing right now?
Well, I think Jahan has had a better season than most fans have realized. I'm seeing a lot of minutes from him. And I think that this kind of thing that you want to see because, you know, he seemed to have a little bit of trouble last year. And actually, despite Hamonic actually having more points last year, overall his play wasn't that fantastic. Sometimes I feel like he gets a little bit overrated or overhyped because of the physical aspect of his game. But I thought that, you know, his defensive game last year wasn't as sharp. And they're getting, you know, I've noticed a lot of games, especially the games that they win, him and Dahan and Hamonic have actually been the minute leaders. And that's actually good to see because you don't want Boychuk and Letty to be constantly leaned on. You need your top four to be the leaned on more. So in that respect, I like what I see. You know, Boychuk's having a fine season so far. I don't think, and it's like I said, with, you know, the Hickey being out has actually caused a little bit of, he tends to be underrated because he can kind of pinch and be used in other pairings because he's got a little bit of skill set. And when he's gone, we're seeing, the third pair has been the glaring piece that is just out of sorts. So the sooner have somebody fill it, the better.
Yeah, the thing about Dahan is, I mean, at 24, you know, sometimes it does take 25 to really see a defenseman's full powers, and he has, you know, growth stunted a bit with injuries. And so I think fans should be happy with the output they're getting. If they're expecting big offensive numbers, they're not going to see that. With the injuries he had, he's not going to provide that. But he is providing some offense, and I think he's providing a lot steadier defense than I think a lot of people thought he had in him, to be honest, because they were looking at him strictly offensively when he was drafted. So I think he's turned out pretty well, and I really, you know, I'm looking at his hit totals. His hit totals are pretty good. His blocks are way up. I mean, he's got 42 already. He's going to be at a really high number this year. Those are positives. So I think they're just expecting offense that isn't there. I think the whole fan base is sort of looking at the offense and sort of pointing at Capuano. And you know, I do want to point out, like when you see things on Twitter, like I saw where fans say, "Hey, half the room doesn't like Jack Capuano." I always want to point out
that was ridiculous. That was ridiculous.
Yeah, I always want to point out, A, you're not in the room, and B, even when we get in the room, we're not in the room. We're in the room after everything's been cleared out and some guys are still there, and maybe some of it's lingering, but we don't even get to see a lot of that. And sometimes if you attend like a practice, you might see a little of it, but we don't even get to see that. So when fans say that, I don't even know where they're getting that from.
I got a quote based on that. I threw that over, and I got this quote, which I've been holding off for you guys.
Okay.
I was told, locker room not split. Guys love Capuano. Not one player would question his actions. That was, you know, from the room. So, And I know after the playoffs that Garth went to his, the captain and the assistant captains. And, talked about, what do you think of Capuano, and do you want the coaches back? And they were all unanimous. So that doesn't tell me that there's any kind of split. That's fantasy. They are, as far as I understand it, they love Capuano, and they don't blame the coaching. As what I was trying to explain to a fan is what they blame themselves. And when players are taken out or sat, no matter what the situation is, that's an organizational decision. If you're not playing to a certain level, you're going to sit. And they're going to stick to that because that is just the hard line of what their expectation is. It's the same expectation that has Strome sitting down. And it's not the same situation as Niederreiter or even Josh Bailey, who was rushed, because it's the opposite. Those players
were pushed into situations
and locked in because they kept on being played when they weren't performing and their confidence got shattered. And this is the opposite. You don't perform, you sit. And that's the way it should be.
I'm going to follow up with this. I think what the Islanders are feeling, at the beginning of the year I said I felt like the end of the year they'll be either 2 points ahead of the Rangers or 2 points behind in a really tough Metro division. And I think they feel the same way, and when they see that they've played two more games than the Rangers and Washington, and they're a game behind, that they feel like, hey, we've got to get this in order now because Pittsburgh's on our heels. Hey, now New Jersey, however they're doing it with mirrors, are on our heels. And so if we want to be in that spot, we got to start doing it, and it's going to have to be all year long. So I think they're just trying to stay ahead of it, to be honest.
Yeah, I think so, too. They're being proactive. They're not going to sit and wait for things to just work itself out. There's an expectation here, and there is a level of that they're the need to be at. And if they're not there, they're going to do whatever it takes to get them there. And, maybe it's true. Maybe Capuano is not the guy to take them to a cup. But you know what? They're not there yet. They're not a cup finalist. We can't have that debate yet. That can't become every scapegoat that comes out there. Eventually, you have to focus on the players. And once the rebuild has ended, and it has ended, it's about performance. And in the end, you have to look at the team and how they perform.
PD, final question for me with regards to, and this is a question pertaining to the Islanders' second-leading scorer, Kyle Okposo, right now, 10 points in 14 games. But everything's been sort of discussed with regards to his long-term future in Brooklyn with the Islanders. I know he's making 2.8 this year and becomes a UFA next year. What is if you had to sort of heads or tails the situation and you're looking forward to potentially to free agency this summer. Is he possible to return to the Islanders, or does it look more likely that he's going to be heading elsewhere?
He's going to be heading elsewhere. I am convinced that, and this has changed from my view at the draft time. At draft time, it seemed that his name was dangled to see what was going to happen. But now it seems like that became the process to start to work on what they could get from other teams to get them to the next, you know, to help in another area. And now my belief is that he will definitely be traded this season, unless a team will not come back with something that they feel is going to help them in any way, and then they're just going to ride out the season and let him walk. The problem is, and I've heard this since before the draft, that he and his agent are looking for $7 million plus, and we've seen with the signings that the market is borne out to meet this, and he's going to be paid that somewhere, and he's showing on that second line this, you know, without JT, that he's decimating that argument. And he's going to be, you know, he still look like he's going to be, you know, 70 points without JT. And that's a tremendous contract year for him. And, you know, the sooner that the Islanders can make the trade, you need to get value. He's a top six guy.
Right.
And when you have somebody of that value, you know, whether it's just another UFA, maybe to help defense, whatever it is, that you need to do a swap, because if he's not the long-term answer because of his price, and that's really what it is. It's not that the Islanders don't want Kyle Poso. It's that they can't afford it and be able to hold on to the Stroms and the Anders Lees and all those players coming up. Yeah, Dal Cole, Barzal.
My XM show tomorrow, I mean, we're talking about Michael Dal Cole, and even though he had a little rough start to his year, in the Canada-Russia series, he's going to be a big cog, and that will probably jumpstart him, and he's going to fill that role, whether it's next year or the year after. So I think the Islanders are looking at that and saying, well, we do have this guy. We got to just get from here to there.
Yeah, I think so, too. And they also have to start to prepare to be able to hold on to, you know, when JT comes up.
Right.
And you know that everything is built around JT. So... Yeah. The fact is that because of that, and because of the price, and because of the years that Kyle is going to want, which is, I'm sure, the 6 years, the seven, it's just not going to work. And, you know, hopefully they can make that trade sooner than later so they can adjust, you know, and if that trade happens, if it's for another UFA or if it's for, you know, a young player, or maybe it's a multiplayer swap. It's going to try to address something for the Islanders to win now. It's not going to be draft picks and prospects for Kyle. This is going to be about making themselves better to win now. So, you know, that's my thought on Kyle. And it's very unfortunate because obviously he's performing well.
Yeah, no question. Well, BD, we really appreciate it. And everybody knows
where to
find you on Twitter, and I actually had an interview with Dal Cole that we'll preempt for this week, and maybe we'll get you back on in a few weeks and put that on. But thanks for coming on, and enjoy the storm.
I will. Bye-bye.
Take care, BD.
All right, Ant, I'm about out of voice here, and so we're going to have to end this show because I've got a cold that I've been weathering all day, and this is my second show, so... Thanks for tuning
go
in to Off the Post.
Go rest that voice, my friend.
Yeah, we'll catch everybody next time.
Take care, everybody.